It was myself who gave him that name, so you would not know him by it.
The halfling?
Yes, the halfling. The one who went up to the roof. You know him, I believe.
The woman seemed very concerned suddenly, and she inadvertently glanced at the oysters, tipping her hand. Indeed, this little halfling, this spider creature, was a valuable commodity to her, the astute Pericolo recognized.
Tell me his name.
Spider, you said.
His real name,
Pericolo said, shifting his tone just enough to carry an undercurrent of a threat.
I'm not for knowing, she said with a gulp. Don't know that he's even got one, for his da's not a man to be bothering with such things.
Pericolo narrowed his eyes.
He's Ivorbreen's boy, she blurted.
Ivorbreen?
Ivorbreen Paraffin. His boy and Jolie's, though she went and died when the little one was born.
Spider?
Aye.
And he is a deep diver, this one?
Aye, so it would seem, and so is his mum.
Pericolo Topolino nodded at her and looked away. Considering the information, and though he wasn't paying the fishmonger any heed, he heard her profound sigh of relief. He liked that he could do that to people. Barely 4 feet tall, and he could elicit such a response from almost everyone in Delphuntle, and in many other places in Greater Aglarond as well.
"Fill a basket with some oysters, then,"
the halfling said cheerily, reaching for his pouch of coins. He paid the fishmonger well for the shellfish. That was Pericolo Topolino's way, of course, eliciting a mixture of fear and gratitude, for he was a person to be feared and to be loved. That was his way. This wasn't working out as he had planned. His maneuver with Bregnan Pruce had been executed perfectly, and the older boy was still reeling, walking tentatively, as much on his toes as on the balls of his feet, and wincing with every step, barely able to keep from cupping his bruised groin. But the boy hadn't come alone, of course, and despite the protests of the elf girl, Regis found himself sorely overmatched. Worse, while he could accept the beating, this had progressed beyond that. They weren't trying to humiliate him. They weren't trying to hurt him. Nay, they were trying to kill him. Two boys held him up by the ankles, and despite his twisting and turning, they managed to get his legs apart just wide enough for Bregnan Pruce to chop his hand down into Regis's groin, taking the halfling's breath away.
That hurt, did it, little spider?
The older boy taunted, and he hit the halfling child again. Indeed, it had hurt, but not as badly as Regis had anticipated. He was still a child, after all, and that particular area of vulnerability wasn't yet as tender as it would become in future years. That seemed of small comfort, though, given that the beating had only just begun. Regis began to cry and just hung there limply, arms hanging low. There would be no pity forthcoming, however, and Bregnan Pruce stepped back and wound up for a great kick into the halfling's face. Regis waited and slyly watched, and as the older boy's foot began to move, he threw his head backward, arching his back as far as he could. Bregnan Pruce missed, and Regis snapped himself back the other way, curling up at his waist, bringing his head up to look alternately into the faces of the two boys holding him by the ankles. Out went Regis's hands to either side, where he flicked the middle finger of each hard under the nose of his respective captors. One cried out and let go, cupping his stung proboscis. Regis threw him down the other way and turned violently as he went, and the second boy, caught off guard, overbalanced, and with a stung nose of his own, couldn't hold on. The halfling executed a perfect flip, landing in a run and sprinting for all his life toward the nearby shoreline. Bregnan Pruce yelled from behind, and Regis soon heard the footsteps as the older boy and his friends closed upon him. He splashed into the water and dived forward, and almost got out of reach, but alas, a strong hand closed on the back of his collar. He was pulled from the water to stare into the hateful eyes of the teenager he had humiliated. With a little evil laugh, Bregnan Pruce thrust him back under the water and held him there. Regis struggled mightily. At one point he broke from the water enough to hear the elf girl screaming and prayed that she might prove to be his salvation. Even in that instance, though, he never quite managed to get his mouth or nose out of the water to draw breath. Pregnant Pruce wasn't letting go. Regis struggled some more for many, many heartbeats. He went into one last great fit of scrabbling, in complete desperation, it seemed. Then he went limp, and let the older boy and the waves determine his movements fully. Still, Bregnan Pruce pressed down on him. There could be no doubt of the boy's murderous intent. Regis didn't fight it. He knew that he could remain there for a long, long while. He could dive 50 feet, 100 feet, and remain on the bottom for long periods of time as he gathered up oysters for his father. He was a deep diver indeed, though he knew not how or why. Surely in his past life he could never have dived so deep, and indeed in his past life he would be dead right now as he was feigning. Finally, the older boy let him go, shoving him off toward deeper water. Regis turned his head as he went, just slightly, so that he could hear the screams of the elf girl, the protests against the apparent murder, and Bregnan Pruce's abrasive dismissal of the whole affair. He heard the teenager splashing out of the surf and felt himself drifting, for the tide was going out. So he just floated, face down, relaxing in the gentle ebbs and flows of the inviting liquid all around him. He smiled widely, though none on the shore could see it, of course, for he had exacted his revenge, and more than that, he had fought past his fears. He replayed the drumbeat of his heels into Bregnan Pruce's groin. He had stared into uncertainty and had stood tall against fear. True, he had almost died for his courage, and indeed only luck, this uncanny ability to survive underwater, had saved him. But it didn't matter to Regis at that time. He had faced his fears and had defeated them. He had willingly walked into battle, indeed had goaded that fight against seemingly impossible odds. He hadn't defeated his external enemies, perhaps, but he had surely beaten back his own fear, and that, of course, had been the entire point. He thought of Drizzt and the other companions of the hall. He remembered the role he had too often played among that group, that of tag-along, or of a helpless little halfling needing to be protected. "Not this time," he mouthed, tickling bubbles bouncing up all around him. "Not this time." Chapter 9. Zabrija. The year of the First Circle, 1468, DR, Netheril. Silent as shadows, the owl drifted along, watching